A recent report in the Canadian Medical Association Journal notes that Lyme disease is being found in regions that were once free from ticks that spread the disease. They are urging the public and health professionals to be more vigilant and learn to recognize some of the signs and symptoms of the disease. I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Ernie Murakami, who's an MD, BA in Bacteriology and Immunology, and is a Clinical Associate Professor Emeritus at the University of British Columbia and President of the Dr. E. Murakami Center for Lyme Research, Education, and Assistance. Good afternoon.
Oh, good afternoon.
My first question to you, although it may seem pretty straightforward, for the public to understand, what exactly is Lyme disease?
Lyme disease is caused by a spirochete called Borrelia burgdorferi, and is very similar to syphilis, which invaded us about 100 years ago, and is now Lyme has taken over that role as being considered the most infectious vector-borne disease in the world.
What is its prevalence in Canada?
The prevalence is much higher than indicated. We have a country that is utilizing the ELISA method, which is picking up 2 cases per million in Canada, and yet immediately across the border, they're picking up 70 per million. So there's a great disparity there, which must be understood. Either we are not doing an effective job in picking it up clinically and by our laboratory methods, or there's something seriously wrong in our statistics. And I feel that we have to update our testing methods and our clinical acumen for the diagnosis of Lyme disease, which is a multi-organ system failure.
So I'd like to return to that in a few minutes. I wanted to ask, what regions of Canada are reporting increases in prevalence of Lyme disease?
Well, right across Canada now.
And in the past, we didn't see... Now, is this something that has migrated up into the area, or has this just hasn't been recognized and is only now starting to be recognized?
I think it's been here for quite a while, but it is being picked up by the ELISA in, say, maybe 6 cases per province per year, which is, I think, a fault of our laboratory technique. And we are not taught in the medical schools about Lyme disease, and I feel that's leading to other multi-diagnoses such as MS and ALS and chronic fatigue syndromes and things like arthritis, depression, psychological problems. And it's really a lot to do with Lyme because it's fooling all the doctors who should know more about the clinical diagnosis, which is not being taught in our medical schools. I've had medical students from literally everywhere in the world. That when I first thing I asked them, I said, "What do you know about Lyme disease?" And it's very, very minimal knowledge being taught in medical schools, and that's our problem. That I'm trying to push education as a foremost important in preparing the medical students and residents about Lyme disease, because we are going to be just inundated with Lyme because of the warming effect of the world, which is now the ticks and insects like the pine beetle. They can survive now up until the northern posts of Alaska. And if you look along the world map, you'll see an area straight across the top part of Canada and goes right across continental Europe. There's a freezing area that they can't survive, and that's well above most of Canada. And that's our problem. We have a warming effect of the world, increasing the deer mice, increasing the ticks. The ticks, one tick can lay up to 10,000 eggs, and most were dying in the sub-zero weather. Now, most of them are living. And to give you an instance, I had a railway worker who had 10 ticks on him at one time. Would you believe that? Which is almost fantastic, but it is happening.
So what are the hallmarks of suspicion for this infection and sort of the signs and symptoms of the disease that should raise suspicion that something is going on?
Well, the medical world says if you don't have a tick bite, a rash, and a positive Lyme in Canada, you do not have Lyme disease, which is an absolute criminal statement. But that's the truth. Doctors are told, if you don't have these 3 things, you don't have Lyme disease. And that is really got to be made public that the picking up the diagnosis of Lyme is clinical, and it's clinical now around the world. Actually, Manitoba is the only province that says it is a clinical diagnosis and that we can't rely on labs. Because if we rely on labs, we're not going to get any diagnosis of Lyme in Canada. And it's got to be taught as a clinical diagnosis until our laboratory testing becomes more effective in picking up the serology or whatever method we're using, but not picking it up.
So what constitutes making that clinical diagnosis?
Well, you have to start with the initial area. If you're lucky enough, you'll have a history of a bite, and you'll get a target rash. But these are counted down in the well below 20% that you even get the rash.
Mm-hmm.
But in the immediate area, you'll get infection from other sources. There are 10 different infections that you can get from a tick bite in North America, and each one has their own specific way of presenting the symptoms. So it's called Lyme and co-infections, which we are not taught about.
Mm-hmm.
But in many of my cases that I do have Lyme, I'll find that they have co-infections, such as Bartonella, Ehrlichiosis, Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever, Mycoplasma. These are found right in the tick's abdomen, and are indicators, or direct indicators, or indirect indicators of being bitten by a tick that was causing the infection. Then you can spread it right into the muscles, the glands, the joints, and it could get into the specific organs like the heart, cause heart block. Both heart block and arrhythmias, tachyarrhythmias, are found in these cases. And then it goes into every specific organ. I've found that the brain is very susceptible, and when it gets into the brain, you have all sorts of cognitive dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
You can't remember things. Your names, faces, telephone numbers are gone. You can't do multitasking. It's just that it's an absolutely total body environment of symptoms.
So what would the patient be saying to their physician when they came in? As with your experience with Lyme disease, what do you typically hear from patients when they come in that raises your suspicion that they have Lyme disease?
First of all, if they live in an infested area of well-known Lyme disease endemic areas, that's a part of the history. The biggest thing that they'll complain about is flu-like symptoms initially after the bite, and that flu-like symptoms may persist with a severe, unexplained fatigue. And most of these people end up getting all sorts of thyroid tests and vitamins and adrenal glands and hormones and testosterone and estrogen, and they'll get all those tests done. They're all normal. And yet they say, I can't work. I can't do anything. Physically, I'm disabled. I can't even have any interest in life and living. So the symptoms is a total collapse of energy, lack of volition, all specific areas of involvement, joints, muscles are aching, they're painful, and they're complaining that, you know, doc, I can't understand it. It's just, I'm totally gone. I can't do anything, mentally or physically.
So in order to treat the patient, you mentioned that making the diagnosis, you cannot depend on the laboratory tests because they either aren't sensitive enough, or the time that you get the result can take up to, I think it can take up to 6 weeks in some cases to get the result. So how do you know when to treat? Because I would think that you would be doing a workup to try and rule out other factors as well. Is this a diagnosis then of exclusion if you've, you know, you mentioned thyroid, you mentioned anemias and vitamin deficiencies and all these other things that would be considered under the banner of unexplained fatigue?
Right.
But is this then a diagnosis that you come up with after everything else shows that it's negative, or is this something that you consider right away?
Well, of course, if it's right after the bite, you have to just go ahead and treat. Most countries in Europe and in the States now and in Canada, if you get a bite and you live in an area where endemic history of Lyme disease persists, then I recommend that they get 3 weeks of antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this, again, is up to the doctor's choice. But if you wait, let's wait till next appointment. I'll take your serology now. The serology takes a week to 2 weeks to get the results. You've missed the most important time to treat the patient, which is sooner the better, because the spirochete is a very active, mobile organism that can invade the body tissues within weeks. It's just all over your body.
Now, does someone have to report a bite? Like, for, are there cases where someone just does not remember that they had a bite? And then does that complicate the ability to make the diagnosis?
Well, the size of a nymphal stage of a tick is the size of a dot.
Okay.
An adult tick is the size of a sesame seed. So if you get bitten by an adult tick, you're going to be aware of it more likely than if you were bitten by a dot the size of a nymph.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very infectious at either stage. Some people say the nymphal stage is even more infectious than the adult. So if you had a dot, nymph on your body, whether it's in the groin, the axilla, or the back of the hair, you wouldn't even know it. And the size of the inoculum is so minimal that the rash may not be developing, which is diagnostic in mm-hmm. many cases. Some states, if you get a target rash or the perfect circle, it's Lyme disease until proven otherwise.
So then this can certainly complicate things when trying to figure out whether Lyme disease is part of that diagnosis if there's no report of the bite to begin with.
That's right. You may never have ever any evidence of a bite or a rash. All you do is develop the clinical symptoms of severe mental and physical dysfunction.
Now, is treatment the same regardless of how long someone has been infected? Because you mentioned it's always better to treat as early as possible to minimize the effects of the infection. What do you do if someone who has been complaining of the fatigue and the muscle aches and potentially behavior changes, and it's now 3 months or 4 months later? Is the treatment the same, or is it for a longer duration? Is there a different antibiotic that's used? What do you do in those cases?
If it goes past 3 or 4 months, you're looking at a minimum of 3 months of antibiotic in combination.
Mm-hmm.
There's a form known as the cystic form, the L form, the granules, and these are embedded in all tissues of the body mm-hmm. and has been found in some tendons and cardiac muscle where these cystic forms survive. My friend, classmate, Dr. Pat McGeer, has done studies on patients who have died from Alzheimer's or other causes but had positive serology, and he's detected in the postmortem study the cystic form in the brains of these patients.
Mm-hmm.
This shows you how hardy and difficult it is to get rid of these organisms. And that's why the combinations are necessary. To get rid of the cystic form or the L form or the granules, you have to use flagyl or tinidazole or plaquenil. Mm-hmm. These are three well-known drugs that will kill the cystic form. So therefore, you have to use something to kill the active infection of the spirochete as well as these resistant survival mm-hmm. forms.
And finally, what should be the take-home message for our listeners, and where can they get more information about Lyme disease?
Well, I do have a website under drerniemurakami.com.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of information is on there. They can ask questions directly to me, whether it's doctors or patients, and I will give them information at any time about their concerns. If there have been bite in any member of the family, they're very concerned. They can consult with me anytime, and I'll help them as best I can, and I will direct them to other doctors and literature that is available.
Well, Dr. Murakami, I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time to talk about Lyme disease, raise awareness, and I'm hoping that our listeners will take this information and use this, because as you've mentioned, there are likely some people out there who have been infected, who are unaware that they were infected, and are suffering with symptoms that have baffled their physicians and themselves because they hadn't considered that as one of the diagnoses.
You're welcome.